women in Paris.
Civil rights activists are concerned the Trump administration cuts to the Census Bureau will hurt tests of its operations this year. This could affect the ability to accurately count the population in 2030. The results of the census are used to determine congressional districts and federal spending. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the maxim that helping someone else less fortunate is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at lodestarfoundation.org. This is NPR.
It is time once again, friends, for Saturday Morning Live Portions Recorded. We're very glad you're here with us this morning on a cloudy but unseasonably warm morning for February on the Augustana College campus. Never mind, you're in time for a conversation with this week's guest, John Hurdy, from Augustana College's music department and many other venues. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll join us here on WVIK for local radio as it's meant to be brewed on Saturday Morning Live, Portions Recorded. Well, John, I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time because in looking back over the time that we've shared together at Augustana, it's been quite a story. And I can't wait to hear some of the stories that I've never heard before. So welcome and thank you for being with us.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Well, there's special timing because a week from this weekend, indeed a week from tomorrow, you will be leading the Handel Oratorio Society and musicians from Augustana and across our community in Handel's Messiah. And it's been a little while, and we're anxious to have it back.
Yeah, it has been. Last performance that we did was in 2022, but before that, we did performances. I mean, before COVID, and a few years before that, we started. Since I've been at Augustana, we were doing Messiah, and I've been here now. This is my 30th year, and I remember sitting in Tom Treadway's office when I first came to Augustana, after I had taken the position, sat down with him in his office, and I remember him clearly. I remember have this memory of sitting and talking about, you know, my responsibilities and what I was going to be doing. Mm-hmm. And he said, "I just want you to know that Messiah will not be stopped on my watch." He was very clear about how we were going to be doing Messiah as long as he was the president of the institution. And I was, you know, at that time, I was super excited about that.
Yeah,
that absolutely. Responsibility that I was given. And, you know, any young conductor would be super happy to have somebody say to them, "Yeah, you're going to have to do Messiah every year." And we did it every year. Three times for many years,
yeah.
three performances,
right,
for
right.
many years at the Christmas time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and actually I've, we did three performances for many years, then we did two performances, and there was a lot of complicated history as to why that's changed a little bit.
Yeah.
And then in the more recent past, we went to one performance and then kind of two things that were happening due to a lot of other changes, things that were happening with the calendar at Augustana and with Christmas at Augustana and things like that have pushed Messiah to the spring, which has complicated all the thing, you know, when we can do it, having to do with Easter and all the movable things that go on in the spring at Augustana. So now it's been, more recently, it's been one performance for the, you know, every 2 or 3 years or something
that.
That's the plan moving forward. Also.
Absolutely. And we'll get into that a little bit more later because it's a fascinating story. But I'm also intrigued by your story. I know where you went to college, but I don't know where you grew up. Where did you grow up?
So I was born in Arizona, and I grew up in, then we moved to Santa Barbara when I was about 4 years old, and I lived in Santa Barbara for 5 or 6 years. My dad was a pastor, mm-hmm. so as is typical for pastor families, there's some moving that they do over time. And then we moved up to Oakland, to the Bay Area in California. So uh-huh. I spent almost all of my junior high, high school days there. And then when I went to college, I started in 1 year in college in California, and my parents really wanted me to go to Bethany College.
Wow.
And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not interested in following in the family footsteps and all of that kind of stuff. And after 1 year at Cal State Hayward, it was a good school, but I just did not really hook it. You know, I was a commuter student. I didn't make a lot of friends. And so I got a call from one of the admissions counselors at Bethany, and I was like, and they said, you want to come? We'd love to have you. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll do that. So I spent 3 years at Bethany, and that's where I was introduced to the Messiah,
yes.
The way it is done here, because because I was a part of one of those many year-long traditions of doing Messiah every year, which at the time they were doing at the Easters. We would do Good Friday, we would do a performance of the St. Matthew Passion, and then on Easter, well, actually on Palm Sunday before that, and then on Easter Sunday, we would do a performance of Messiah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Well, before, I don't want to get too far ahead of us here, but I had the honor of knowing not just your dad, but your mother as well, and both legends in the Augustana Synod. And when you mentioned that, it reminds me, I was very fortunate. My dad was a pastor too.
Mm-hmm.
And because he kind of found a niche in campus ministry, we never had to move. But I always
felt for my
PK friends who would, you know, pick up and move and go to interesting places.
Right, right.
But I was intrigued, man. You had to make the shift from, and I've been to both places, Ghirardelli Square to Lindsborg, Kansas.
Right? Yeah,
that's a big difference.
Right.
I mean, the food's good in both places.
Yeah. Well, and of course, I had never lived anywhere where it was winter time. I love to ski. I skied a lot up in the Sierra Nevadas when I was younger. You know, I'd been in snow, but I could go there and then come back home to the warmth, you know, and Northern California isn't, you know, it's not like Southern California where it's sunny and warm all the time, but it was very odd if we got any snow or hail or anything like that. Right.
Sure.
So I wasn't used to that kind of a thing, but so in some ways moving to a small town, you know, moving from the San Francisco Bay Area, Oakland and San Francisco Bay Area, to Lindsborg for me was super exciting because I got to experience a small town, which I had never really experienced before. I got to experience winter, which I had never experienced before. And so, those were exciting times for me to be able to. And I remember I took the bus from downtown Oakland out to Lindsborg, Kansas, rode the bus.
My goodness.
Yeah, it was like I can't remember, 20-something hours.
At least. And you had to change several times.
Yeah, and I got on that bus and I was like, said bye mom and dad, I'll see you later. And you know, that was the day before, you know, in the old days when it was way less expensive, and so, you know, instead of flying, just take the bus across country.
And
why not?
I've made some long runs that way too,
right.
But I know where Lindsborg is. You had to make quite a few connections to pull that off. But I will say Lindsborg is a delightful town. If you ever get a chance, friends, go and visit. But this college really grew up around the Messiah in some ways. And I have been in the performance space, which is a lovely one.
Yeah.
But I think you could fit all of Lindsborg in that space.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. The town, I think, I can't remember the population, but it's very small, right? Very small. And at the time, the college had about 700 students or something like that. So and I think that was probably about a third the size of the town. So, you know, the college was a huge part of what happened in that town.
And it took a lot of the students taking part in the Messiah to make that happen, because it is a major undertaking.
Right. Yeah. It is. It is. And they had a community. They had a group like our Oratorio Society that was made up of what we call town and gown, right? Mm-hmm. It's like people from the community as well as people from the college. And then the orchestra was made up of the student orchestra and then also community members. So it was a sort of a combined community school orchestra that happened. Yeah. And I think, just like in the old days here, I think there were maybe 250 people singing and a fairly good size orchestra to go along with it. It was a big undertaking.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you'll indulge me, I love the story of how music links those two colleges, Bethany and Augustana, and the Messiah. And there was a fellow named Olaf Olsson who would later become a president at Augie. Mm-hmm. He was doing some overseas travel on a sabbatical, and he had to wait for a steamer, like waiting for the bus to Lindsborg, in London a couple of days. And he saw a handbill for Handel's Messiah at Exeter Hall. Mm-hmm. And what's lovely is he was so impressed by that and wrote down afterwards his feelings of being in that hall when the whole chorus of these voices, hundreds of voices, lifted up and said, his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor. He said he could feel it in the marrow of his bones.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was so impressed. And, we don't have recording devices in 1879, but he gets back to Rock Island and says, I want to do this here. And
right.
And the chutzpah, I don't know if chutzpah is appropriate to use with Messiah. I don't know. But anyway, he puts together, we at the time had the college band. So there were music programs here.
Right.
And I think singing groups began at the college within about 2 weeks of opening. I mean, Swedes just love to sing.
Yeah.
And he started putting these things together. It took him until 1881. When he had a fully fledged orchestra, chorus, and some soloists.
Mm-hmm.
And right off the bat, they took it on the road. They wanted to go to Galesburg, but there was a tremendous storm that washed the road out. So they stopped in Andover.
Right.
And but then within a year or two, he took a traveling Messiah to Bethany College.
Right.
And they've done it Ever since.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
So I think that's a phenomenal way that these two were linked. And as I said, he went on to become a president of Augustana, but he always maintained his connection with music and touring.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. That was a big part of the history of the institution of the music department was that idea that they were taking the music out to places around the community, outside of the community, and sharing the music with. And it's fascinating because once they started doing Messiah at Bethany, and we continued to do Messiah at Augustana, there was almost, it wasn't a real competition, but it almost felt like, okay, so how many, who's done it more times?
Mm-hmm.
Because we started earlier, but then there was a time when there was a pandemic or something early on.
We didn't do it in 1918.
So
we took a break.
Right. And so there was this kind of thing going on, how many actual years, which would have been Augustana, would have done it more years in, not in a row without a break, but how many times have you performed it? So it's fascinating.
Bethany has done it more often, but we did it first and brought it to them.
Right, right.
So we can both win.
Yeah, that's right.
But the connection doesn't end there because I would, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit. There was a teacher of yours at Bethany who, now the choral tradition, as I said, goes way back at Augie, but it wasn't until 1931 that a guy named Henry Veld created what we now know as the Augustana Choir. There was a women's ensemble named the Orioles, men's group called the Wennerbergs, and many others. And he was the one who had the vision to create a co-ed choir. And one of his students was a guy named Elmer Copley.
Yeah.
Who became your teacher.
Right.
So
right.
This provenance, I think, is just fascinating.
Yeah. So my connection with Augustana really started when I was at Bethany, even though I know that actually I have family connections. My grandmother, I found out later that my grandmother had attended, and I have other cousins that have attended Augustana. But I really found out more about Augustana through working with Elmer Copley, because most of the time in rehearsal when we were rehearsing with the Bethany Choir, we heard about about Henry Veld.
Yeah.
That, because that was Copley's teacher, and so he talked about him quite often. And it wasn't until I got here in 1996 that I realized how much that connection meant, and what that meant to me, actually.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, because, for instance, the song that we, I know this doesn't have to do with Messiah, but this, the song that we did, that we do at the end of our concerts, Children of the Heavenly Father, Trigare kan ingen vara, it is a song that Henry Veld used, and therefore we used it at Bethany. And so when I came back to Augustana later, I arranged that for the Augustana choir, and we still sing that. So that's a really interesting long-term connection that weaves together the various directors.
Well, and there's many things I find fascinating about this story. But first off, Trigare kan ingen vara, I think. I don't know that it's legal to either baptize or plant a Swede without singing.
Right.
But there are these other traditions that I want to touch on here too. So we'll dive back in to Messiah in a moment. Remember, friends, if you don't already have your tickets, it's going to be February 22nd, which is a week from tomorrow. And you can get tickets online at augustana.edu/tickets or call our office at 309-794-7306 so you can get a chance to hear that. But as we talk about the choir, I really wanted, you continued another great tradition at Augustana of travel. And the choir traveled, they were always traveling, and Veld brought them to Sweden in 1960 for the centennial of Augustana mm-hmm. College. They sang for some members of the royal family. And then his successor, Don Morrison, continued that. And there were classmates of mine who actually linked arms with the king and queen.
Yeah, that's right.
That was mm-hmm. a famous moment. And then you have now taken the choir in your 30 years of leadership, not just to Sweden, but you've worked out the passport. It's a lot more than that. Where all have you taken this choir?
Yeah, so over the time that I've been here, we've done 8 international tours. So we have a rotation. We do what we call regional tours, which means get on a bus at Augustana and drive somewhere north, south, east, or west from here for a week or something like that. And then we do national tours. And that would be, when we say national tour, it means we go to California or New York or Florida or whatever. We go direct, we fly somewhere and we travel around that area, which I got a little side,
please,
little side story about when the choir went to California with Henry Veld, they used a train, and they had one car on the train for the men and one car on the train for the women. When I came to Augustana, I met with the 30 years ago, I met with the officers of the choir, and they said to me, we travel with 2 buses, and one bus has the basses and tenors, and one bus has the sopranos and altos. And they said, that's really important to us. That's part of our tradition, and we want, and that started with Veld, and we want to keep that. Do you have a problem with that? And I said, no, that's fine with me. I mean, it's a little weird compared to what I'm used to,
sure,
right?
Sure.
But that's just fine, and it stayed that way until post COVID, when the choir got small enough that we actually just have one bus. But that was a thing that lasted for many, many years.
And they used to do homestays.
Right,
at
exactly.
The old Augustana Synod congregations that they would go and visit.
Right, and that was a big part of what the excitement about tour was, being able to stay with members of the congregation that we sang for, and then they would get to, you know, they would have snacks and sit around with the people and talk afterwards, and then the next day the students would get on the bus and, you know, talk about the homestays that they had and what they had for their snacks and what they did with those people, and it was always super fun.
Well, and you've gone far beyond North America and even in Europe. I mean, tell us about some of the
So out of the 8 times that we've done international tours, we were 5 times we've been to Scandinavia, mm-hmm. Always to Sweden, but we've also gone to Denmark and Norway. We've traveled to Germany and Chechnya and Spain and France and Austria and China.
And Italy. I think we were in Italy.
Right.
Because on that tour, you guys started along the Côte d'Azur.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And then left that beautiful, idyllic scenery and then went all the way up to Stockholm.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Right. That tour was the one where we traveled the most internationally in different places, right?
Yeah,
so we started way down in France and Italy area, and then flew back up to Sweden to finish that tour.
And you took students, I've seen the picture, to the Great Wall of China.
Yes, that's right.
That was really cool.
Yeah, that was an amazing, amazing tour that we took. And that was part of a large grant from the Freeman Foundation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that grant allowed us to do a number of things with bringing the arts to China and bringing people from China to the United States and all of this kind of thing. And that culminated in a major tour. It was, I think, around 3 weeks in China. And it was really cool.
Wow.
Really cool.
Well, just one little aside that we did an alumni tour that shadowed you on the France, and we didn't go into Italy, but going up to Sweden. And the funny thing was, all of these Americans on the alumni tour, we had lovely little places to stay, and a French hotel breakfast is very light.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're assuming you're going to go whole hog later in the day.
Right.
And I kept telling these guys, wait till you get to a Swedish hotel breakfast.
Right. Yeah.
And they said, no,
completely
we're in France.
Different.
We're
yeah.
in France. This has got to be the best there. And the cheese was fine, but there wasn't much of it.
Right.
And then you get to a Swedish hotel breakfast. And if you don't get full there, you're not
a huge smorgasbord every morning.
Smorgasbord. So, Exactly. Exactly. Well, okay. So we're talking about touring. You mentioned a couple of these great traditions, and it is one of the most traditional bound activities at Augustana, which has got a few over 166 years. What were some of the others that were surprising to you when you came? And I do distinctly remember when you came in 1996.
You're talking about the traditions of the choir?
Of the choir, yes.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I mean, most of the traditions revolved around what we did on tour. And I think a lot of them were started by Don Morrison, mm-hmm. because we would take what they called mall tours. And a mall tour means this is a regional tour where you're in the Midwest and you're traveling from one performance to the next performance. And at lunch, you stop at a mall and so they were trying to find things that would make it more fun for the choir, right? So they had, at the time, it was called Boys and Girls Day, where they would select somebody, and on one of the boys' day, they would have a girl would take them for lunch and get them a little gift, and vice versa for the girls and boys' days. They had Big Hair Day, so in the morning, people would show up from their homestays with their hair all like crazy and stuff like that, and then you would get a prize for the best for the best hair. And then there was Limerick Day, so that they would write a limerick for somebody. They would choose names and then write a limerick. So there was all kinds of things that they would do. And then they have all kinds of there are awards every morning after they do their homestays and everything. There would be awards for something that happened the day before with some student on the tour, and they, you know, what they it actually was really interesting.
Oh, sure.
It revolved kind of around the idea of how they were dressed. I mean, we had tradition of dressing very nice.
Of course.
Like most of the college choirs that I had been in before, you know, like you jeans, t-shirts, whatever, you could do whatever. But the Augie choir had this really interesting tradition of dressing like business casual.
Well, we're going to get back to more traditions here in just a moment. My guest is John Hurdy, Director of Choral Activities at Augustana College. You're listening to Saturday Morning Live on WVIK. We hope you will stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Janice Guidry, a WVIK NPR listener and contributor. I enjoy listening to the BBC News on WVIK.
I'm Nagin Farsad in for Peter Sagal. Valentine's Day is this weekend, and listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is the perfect way to distract your partner while you run out to get the flowers you forgot to buy. That's this week's news quiz from NPR.
Saturdays at 11 a.m. on WVIK.
This week on No Small Endeavor, do our closest relationships have the power to transform us?
It's not just what is my desire and what do I get to have. It is in the pursuit of what I say that I want, what kind of a person am I becoming?
Psychiatrist Dr. Kurt Thompson and I discuss what it means to create healthy relationships within our communities, with our intimate partners, and with ourselves.
Sunday at 6 a.m. on WVIK.
And this is Saturday Morning Live, portions recorded, but I'm going to put in a plug for what you just heard. If you have not checked out No Small Endeavor, it is one of my favorite shows on WVIK. If you're not up at 6 a.m. on Sundays, well, you can listen to it streaming. But the good news is you're right where you want to be, because we're in the middle of a conversation with Dr. John Hurdy, who is the director of choral activities at Augustana College. He's also the music director and conductor for the Handel Oratorio Society and the Augustana Choir. And we're talking about all kinds of little bits and pieces weaving together, all the while reminding you that Messiah will be produced at Augustana a week from tomorrow, February 22nd, 3 p.m. in Centennial Hall. And if you'd like tickets, you can go online to the college's website and search tickets, or 309-794-7306. When we were talking about how at Bethany College they have a lovely venue for choral music, Centennial Hall was in many ways designed specifically to host an oratorio with plenty of space for singers and orchestra and everything else.
Yeah, both of those halls, the one at Bethany and the one at Augustana, were really built in to be able to do major performances of Messiah. And I mean, we use ours for everything else, but it surprisingly works almost better for Messiah. I mean, not surprisingly, that was how it was designed. Mm-hmm. But it really works for performances of Messiah, for large performances of Messiah. So, you know, in the old days, or at original, in the days in the Baroque period, it would have normally been done with a smaller chorus. But even in Handel's later years, it was became massive performances Messiah. And we have continued that practice of doing something that's quite large. We have about 170 in the chorus this year. The orchestra is it's a professional orchestra, small. We used to do with the Augustana Orchestra, but now with Christmas at Augustana and the way the calendar works and all that doesn't work anymore. So we use a professional orchestra, which is about 30 players. And then so that hall is built with the organ right behind and the concrete steps, so that, and they're seated risers, so that so we can have a huge chorus and make that work. Mm-hmm. And it's super exciting. And you know, the thing that I really love about the way in which the performance is built, how the chorus is built, for instance, is that it's made up of community members, people who've been doing it for many, many years. At the beginning of rehearsal sequence, you know, we always ask people to stand, you know, how many have been in for 5, 10, 15, 20, up to, you know, 50 years, the people that have been involved. But it's fascinating, because every year that group of, you know, 0 to 5 and 5 to 10 is actually quite large, because there's a lot of people over the years that have become a part of that experience from the community. It's also made up of Augustana Choir members. They are involved in it whether they like it or not. But actually, I would say that, I mean, my opinion is that they maybe aren't sure they like it at the beginning, but when they do the performances, it becomes something really special for them. And it's a great pedagogical experience. And I think especially now that we're doing it every, you know, 3 or 4 years, it's not like they're doing the same thing over and over and over again. They're getting other experiences, other oratorios that we do, but they also have a chance to do this amazing oratorio, the Messiah. And so that's made up of those students, and then other students that just choose to be involved, and then Augustana faculty and staff members that want to be involved. And it's just a really, really good group. And I just think it's so exciting to see how the community can come together with a mixture of amateur and professional people that are involved.
That is a huge part of it. And I'm glad that you mentioned that aspect. And, you know, I when folks ask, well, didn't you used to do it every year? I always tell them, well, that was great and selfish for us, the audience right. members, but it was not really putting the students' needs first. And one of the things that's exciting about the transition with Christmas at Augustana is students over 4 years get exposed to a much broader array of repertoire because, you know, every Messiah performance is a little bit different, choosing which recitatives, arias, and so on mm-hmm. and so forth. But there are certain things that are there every year. You're never going to do it without the Hallelujah right, chorus and right. that sort of thing. So it really is in the best interest of the students that they get to mix it up. And that's why, as director of the Oratorio Society, you've also exposed us to some great other requiems. I think of the Fauré Requiem I heard you do.
Yeah, we've done Durafle, Verdi, the Brahms. Those are some of my favorites. German Recently, Requiem. We did the Bernstein Chichester Psalms. We've done Symphony No. 9 with the Quad City Symphony.
And that's a great partnership. You guys have done some great repertoire with the QCSO, which has been, and the ultimate beneficiary, well, I say I am because I like to listen, but the students gain so much more from that kind of an exposure and an opportunity.
But there are people who really feel that Messiah is so important to the history, and I agree with this too, that history and tradition, like that they, and this is why we're able to do these performances right now, because Donna Brunner has essentially come forward and said, we would love to see Messiah happen. And I said, well, it's really complicated these days with Christmas at Augustana and our calendar change, which doesn't allow us many weeks after Thanksgiving to do what we used to do. We used to have 3 weeks. Now we have essentially 1 week plus finals week, which makes it very difficult to put things at that time of the year. And then when we try to move it to the spring, there's all kinds of other complications having to do with when our breaks are. But she stepped forward and said, you know, I'd like to make a, and she made a significant donation in the name of her and Kim Brunner, who was a member of the Augustana Board of Trustees for many years. Yeah. And that has made it possible for us to be able to continue to do this on a semi-regular basis, which I think, you know, and that's because somebody really wants to, you know, Kim, Donna really wanted to see this put out for the community.
For folks who, if that name sounds familiar, well, their generosity extends to the Brunner Theater Center, which Donna and Kim Brunner helped to create at Augustana, which is a state-of-the-art place for our theater students to learn more and practice their craft. And it wouldn't have happened without them and this production. And that sort of support is necessary for getting some amazing soloists that you've been able to attract for this production. What can you tell us about some of these great guest artists?
Yeah, so I'm super excited about this because, as I think some people know, this will be my last performance of Messiah.
Well, I was going to get to that.
Yeah, yeah. And so what happened this year is I reached out to some of the people that I have worked with in the past that I've really enjoyed working with. Michelle Arizaga, Jesse Wright, and Stephen Soff. That's the soprano, mezzo, and the tenor that I know from the past that have sung here before. And they're really amazing soloists, and I've just really enjoyed working with them. And then we also have a bass, Jonathan Woody, who I don't know, but he was recommended by a lot of people, and I've heard his recordings, and and he's really great.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about the soloists that we have this year.
Yeah. And this is a little closer to the time, you know, that it was first performed at Easter in Dublin, Ireland. And that's where I think Handel envisioned it being. I don't know if he could have imagined that a couple of centuries after his passing that it would still be such a big deal.
Yeah.
But it was always done at Easter. And then, it became, like you said, at Bethany. And at Augie, it shifted over to Christmas time, somewhere in the early 20th century.
Right.
Which was, and now we think of the Hallelujah Chorus, we more associate, I think, with Christmas.
Yeah, I would say in especially in the United States, Messiah has become a real tradition, a real Christmas tradition, right? And, but it is intended for performance at Lent. Actually, because it was not possible to do operas during Lent, and Handel was besides being an amazing musician, he was also a business person, and he understood that, and so he wrote Messiah partially because he couldn't do an opera, he could write an oratorio during that time of the year. Mm-hmm. So it was done at near the end of Lent around that time.
Yeah,
so.
And Handel, of course, we want to point out, was an immigrant. He started in Germany, and he actually skipped out on his contract with an elector there and left without permission and overstayed his the amount of time he could have been away, even on vacation. And the wonderful irony was that elector later became King George of England. Yeah. So he tracked him down and all was forgiven. We've still got some time to chat about this that's coming up. But, you know, we have traditions here too, Dr. Hurdy, at WVIK. And one of those is keeping alive the great work of a former colleague of ours, Dr. Roald Tweet. And this time every week, we step aside and make space for Rock Island Lines.
This is Roald Tweet on Rock Island. Walk down to the river's edge anywhere near Rock Island, and you'll see them. Lone men and women standing or sitting along the shore facing the water. From late April until mid-November, they line the Moline waterfront along Ben Butterworth Parkway or the wooded banks of Sylvan Slough. They congregate under the bridges and along rocky levees, never closer to each other than 50 feet or so. Nearly all of them are fishing, or pretending to. Each of them guards one or two fishing poles propped on rocks, the lines at the end curving out to tiny bobbers riding the waves, and then disappearing into whatever world is there beneath the surface of the Mississippi. They sit as still as actors and actresses who have taken their position on the stage and are waiting for the curtain to be drawn and the lights to come up. Their attire is proper attire for their calling. Neither the suits and dresses of the work world nor the touristy safari clothes from the Banana Republic and Eddie Bauer, but scuffed shoes, overalls, blue work shirts, and worn hats. And a calling it is, too. Our Rock Island fishermen and women are members of a fraternity of sentinels and seers who stand watch along all the world's shores. The poet Robert Frost saw them standing by the Atlantic Ocean in New England, backs to the land, and he wrote of them, "They cannot look out far, they cannot look in deep, but when was that ever a bar to any watch they keep?" While the rest of us diaper our children, shop for groceries, wait for weekends, and buy new cars, these sentinels of the Mississippi follow their fishing lines down to where all the world's sacred waters are one, are connected, Ganges and Mississippi. For this reason, in your stroll along the river, do not go up to our watchers and ask how the fish are biting. You would be interrupting church.
Rock Island Lines with Roald Tweet is underwritten by Augustana College, Rock Island, Illinois.
And it's because of that that we get to hear this week in and week out. Also, because of you, dear listener, your support of WVIK makes a home for Rock Island Lions possible. If you'd like to be a supporter, you can go to wvik.org and you'll find a fairly hard-to-miss donate button up in the corner, and we'll keep that magic going. Speaking of magic going, the traditions here around Augustana Choir, the oratorio, which goes back to 1881 with that 1 year they took off for the influenza pandemic. And then even though, you know, in our more recent pandemic, my guest being Dr. John Hurdy, you found a way to bring us choral music in time of pandemic. Would you mind telling us about that?
Yeah, so we actually did perform Messiah, in quotes, perform Messiah through digital means, right? So we put together one of those kinds of things where you have you have it all recorded, you did it separately recorded, and then mashed it all together.
Yeah, it was like a checkerboard.
Yeah, of all the people that had put in their recordings, their individual recordings, and then made one big thing. And we did, I think, three of the choruses, the Hallelujah chorus, maybe Four Unto Us, and the Amen chorus, it seems like we recorded that year. So we were able to continue a little Messiah even during the pandemic.
I think, though, again, I don't need to spend too much time on this, but this does, I think, help a student who by their senior year had done some of those things four times. I think it makes it maybe more special for the students that, whom you'll be conducting next Sunday, a week from tomorrow, that this is their shot.
Is their one time to be able to do it. And it's a lift, because Messiah is not an easy, there's a lot of choruses in it, and it's quite difficult for that time period. There's a lot of music in it, and so it's quite a lift for when they don't, in the old days when it was three, you know, the sophomores, juniors and seniors all knew it already and had performed it, gone through the rehearsal sequence and had performed it, and the only people that didn't know it from the choir were the first years, right? Mm-hmm. and so they would just kind of learn it as they went along, and now everybody's starting from square one. So it's a lot.
Well, another choral, a tradition of the Augustana Choir that I wanted to ask you about is if you ever go to an Augustana Choir concert, pity the folks who get up right at the end and walk out and leave, because there's a very wonderful tradition. It's more for the alumni, but you gather in a circle and you sing the school song, By the Mighty Mississippi,
right?
Which was actually stolen from my high school alma mater.
That's right, from Rock Island High. Yeah.
But one of the things, I've witnessed this a few times, and the tradition is at a certain point, everybody kicks a shoe in the air.
Right.
Where did that come
from? I have no, I really don't know. I heard different things from different people, because it started way before I was there.
Yeah.
But I think they just got to a point where there was some tour that they were, it was a long tour and everyone was tired, and they got in their circle and then people just started kicking their shoes off, and that just became a thing, you know? So it's fun. Actually, the students are adamant about doing it after every concert, even if it's raining outside or whatever. They figure out a way to get in a big circle and sing and kick their shoes off.
Yeah. The other thing is, though, we talked about some venerable oldies in the course of this conversation, but you've brought us so much cool new music. And I just wonder how you find these things. And the one that, two that come to mind, but the first one is, goes back to, I think, the 2008 tour, Desh, where the orchestra was singing as if they were traditional Indian instruments.
Yeah.
And it's still just, it sticks with me. I can hear it in my mind's ear. Where do you find these things?
Yeah. So nowadays, I think it's easier than it used to be, because there are a lot of performances online that you can search around for. In the old days, we used to look in books and magazines and stuff like that, but now you can do a lot of searching online for and there's a lot of really good performances online of interesting music. Mm-hmm. And I think more and more composers are interested in sharing cultural, like music from a variety of cultures. And I think Desh is a good example of the early beginnings of what's now become quite common.
Yeah.
And actually, interesting that you say, that you talk about that piece, because there are two pieces based on Indian ragas, Desh and one other. And I think probably I will do one of those on our Scandinavian tour this year, because they're such interesting pieces. They use overtone singing and interesting scales. And I've been finalizing the program for our, in the last month or so, for our Scandinavian tour. And one of the pieces that I've thought about doing is Desh. So it's either that one or one of the other ragas.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure will be on that program.
Another one that comes to mind, and I think this was in the mid teens of this century. And I don't remember the title or the specifics, but it depicted a terrible sea tragedy, a Baltic ferry that crashed.
Kanticum.
And there was, I think there's Finnish in it and there's Latin. And but the way everything comes together is so emotional without even understanding a lick of a word of what's going on.
Yeah.
How did the students react to that?
So we did that on our Sweden tour, and it was about, the story was a news report from a Swedish newspaper about this terrible crash that happened in the Baltic Sea. And fascinating, fascinating piece by Mantyervi, which is, and it, like you said, it had all kinds of mixed things going on. There was sort of a baritone solo that told a new story, a soprano that was supposed to represent an angel. The choir was like it kind of took the sea, like they were a picture of the sea and stuff like that. It was very dramatic, very dramatic piece.
Amazing work. Yeah. So I can't wait to hear. Now, we mentioned that you're going on a tour of Scandinavia. You'll be performing in at least Norway and Sweden. And as always, you end at the beautiful cathedral in Uppsala.
Yeah.
Will there be a chance for those of us who can't go to Sweden to hear some of these things? Will this be on a spring concert program?
Yeah, so we're doing a what we call a home concert before a pre-tour home concert on May 17th. So it's that is the week before Augustana has their graduation, and we'll be doing that on Sunday afternoon. I think I'm pretty sure it's the 17th of May. And yeah, that will include the entire program. So we'll be singing the whole program. And we're going to do that over at St. Paul Lutheran in Davenport. It's called Home Concert, but one of the reasons we'll be singing there is because the venues that we'll be singing in Sweden and in Norway will be big acoustic, you know, like very live acoustics.
Yeah, yeah.
And Centennial is it's large, but it's fairly dry, whereas the church is much more like the places that we'll be singing.
Yeah,
so
you sing at a lot of churches and places like that. So that'll be exciting. You'll get a chance to see this. Now, you mentioned a minute ago that this is going to be the last Messiah. So what's going on, John?
Yeah, well, this is the end of our Sonia's and my 30-year stint at Augustana. This has been a really bittersweet year. You know, there's all of these times where, it's the last time we're going to be able to do this and the last time, you know, and then there's a few things that I think, this is the last time I'm going to do that. But mostly it's too bad this is the last time we're going to be able to do this.
I'm glad you mentioned Sonia, who's been an incredible partner in making these experiences available to our students.
Yeah.
But you guys have been at the helm for basically a third of the life of one of the most storied organizations at Augustana. And what happens in terms of transition? We had Veld, we had Morrison, very long multi-decade tenures, and yours. What's next for the choir?
Yeah, so the institution has hired a young man named Eric Newell. Mm-hmm. He's I say young because he really is young. he's finished his doctorate at Austin, Texas, and he's had some experience conducting high school choirs as well as the work that he did at Austin while he was working on his doctorate he was essentially a faculty member working with one of the ensembles there. And he came, I don't know him really well, although I've had quite a bit of contact with him since he was hired. He's a really great conductor, wonderful person, and I'm super excited. I'm very confident that that the tradition is going to continue the way it has. I'm very happy about that.
And just as importantly, what are some things that you see on the horizon for you?
Yeah, so this is the end of 30 years of a job that I don't think is a job. I mean, we think of what we've been doing here together as just it is a job. It's our work, but it's also what we do because we love to do it. And that's the way that I have felt about working at Augustana for my entire career. So in that way, we're sad for that to be, that we're not going to have that anymore. But Sonia and I are, we're ready to, I pass the baton, right? And we're excited for the future of the program. For us, we don't know what we're going to do for sure. It's going to be the quote next chapter in our life.
Yeah.
And we really don't have a lot of plans. I have a couple of grandkids. We have a couple of grandkids now, almost 1 year old and an almost 4 year old. Our daughter's family lives in, with the grandkids, lives in Arlington Heights. So we, you know, we travel there now, but we'd like to spend more time there. Our son lives out in California. And so, yeah, we'd like to travel there. I love to ski. Sonia puts up with it. we love to hike and do things like that. So we're going to try to get out and do some travel. And also just some traveling that's, you know, we've taken many, many choir tours, but we haven't done that much traveling on our own, you know, just without work travel is different from personal travel, right? So
yes, it is.
So we might actually do some traveling on our own and things like that. So yeah, I think we're at a point where we feel like we still have the health and ability to enjoy life for a little while, and we're looking forward to that.
Oh, I just wish you the best of all of it. So it takes a while to make that adjustment. So I have led some alumni tours for Augustana, and we're even going to do one here for WVIK.
Right.
And if you want to go on a Christmas cruise down the Danube, go to WVIK.org/travel and find out more. That'll be in December. But last September, Jenny and I got a chance to take a trip that we've been thinking about for so long.
Yeah.
And it was a small group. It was a bicycling tour. Mm-hmm. And there were about, you know, 8-9 other people in the group. And that was it.
Yeah.
And you got to stop yourself, because if I would catch myself wanting to make a count of people, she would slap my hand. You are not the tour guide.
Right, exactly.
You are not. Well, and the other problem was, I think I was the only one on that particular, well, there was one other who could speak German. So everyone kept trying to sort of glomer. No. And Jenny was like, no, we're going to stay here and you know, have a second bagel or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's going to be so much fun for you and Sonia to travel around without counting 71 noses everywhere you go.
That's exactly right. We love traveling with students, because they're always, they're experiencing, a lot of them are experiencing it for the first time. That's amazing, right? But yes, we're looking forward to not having to worry about what they're doing when we're not around them or, you know, keeping track.
I'll tell you, I've swapped notes with professors before. And here's the thing. If you're 20 and you're getting in trouble, you know you're getting in trouble.
Right,
so you're looking for egress routes.
Right.
If you're 75, and that's usually the age of the folks that I get to tour with, delightful, but you sometimes don't realize you're getting in trouble, and you better watch out where you're going.
That's right.
It makes a huge difference. Well, and before we wrap things up, I always love to ask guests if there's something you've been reading, watching, listening to that you found captivating and would share as a recommendation for us.
Both Sonia and I have read Gentleman Moscow.
I love that
book. And we're actually, we read it, and now we're watching that series that goes along, which is different from the book.
Yes.
But there's some similarities, right? And we're really enjoying that. It's really fascinating.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I loved the book, The Gentleman in Moscow. And I don't want to pay for one more streaming service.
Right.
But you'll say that it's worth watching the series as well?
It's quite interesting to watch the series also. So
Wow. Okay. So once again, we're going to remind people that Messiah will be performed at Centennial Hall February 22nd. That is a week from tomorrow at 3 p.m. as Dr. John Hurdy leads the Handel Oratorio Society and other members of the community and college, everybody chipping in for this extraordinary opportunity we have. If you'd like ticket information, you'll find it at augustana.edu/tickets or calling 309-794-7306. I used to be your public relations guy. How am I doing?
You're doing great.
Okay.
Yeah, you got all the deets.
All the deets. Well, thank you, John. This has been a personal treat for me.
Thank you, really.
Appreciate your
time. Enjoyed it.
Well, great. That's going to have to do it for this week, my friends. And again, thanks to Dr. John Hurdy from the Augustana College Music Department. Coming up on WVIK, it'll be Wait, Don't Tell Me. And we want you to join us next week when our guest will be the one and only Decker Plain from the city of Bettendorf, right here on Saturday Morning Live Portions Recorded. Quick check of the forecast. Today, mostly cloudy skies, but it's still going to be quite nice with a high near 56 degrees. For tonight, mostly cloudy and overnight low around 33 degrees. Tomorrow, sunny. That high is going to inch up near 60. And then Sunday night, overnight low about 40. For Washington's birthday on Monday, our high near 63. Now, we get a chance of rain sneaking in during the course of the week, but it ends well, partly sunny on Friday with a high near 44 degrees. So glad you joined us this week on Saturday Morning Live, Portions Recorded. And once again, remember, if you'd like details on a chance to go cruising down the Danube to the Christmas markets of Germany and Austria, you can find out plenty of details at wvik.org/travel. You can always find our podcast at wvik.org, or you just tune in to Quad Cities NPR, WVIK 90.3 FM and HD in Rock Island, and at 95.9 FM K240 DZ in Dubuque. We're coming up on 11 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in. Wait, don't tell me, just around the corner. Stay tuned for all the fun on your local public radio station, WVIK.